Hello and welcome back to the From the Nosebleeds podcast, season 2, episode 12. Back on another Tuesday, Thomas Pokernik and Thomas Coburn, as always, joined by producer Paulo Gismondi. What's going on, Coburn?
Not much. We're finally wrapping up school. I feel like I've been saying that for the last like 2 weeks now, but we're really coming down to the wire here. I think we both have a couple days left. Maybe you have one exam there, but almost done. Busy weekend. Didn't get to watch as much football as I would like, but how was your weekend?
It was not too bad. The snow's coming down as I'm looking outside right now, which means it's December. I'm a big fan of December football. And this December in particular, I think we're going to start getting football every single day of the week, especially with how things are going. This week, I think we just once this season, we had Tuesday night football. And I talked about how it just messed up my entire week.
This that was Chiefs-Bills, right? Yeah. Chiefs-Bills.
No, Chiefs-Bills was Monday, I think.
Was it
Titans-Bills that was on the Tuesday?
Yeah, Titans-Bills was Tuesday, and then Chiefs-Bills was like the early Monday night.
Yeah, the 5 o'clock. Yeah. And we were supposed to have another one. And then next week, it's Dallas versus the Ravens on Tuesday night football. So I have no idea what's going to happen. Just my schedule is just going to be all over the place. It's going to feel like Monday on a Wednesday now. But you know what? It's
even
more
worse
time
though
to watch games
than just Wednesday. Wednesday at 3:40.
And why is it Wednesday at 3:40? The best reason.
Honestly, you have to respect NBC's decision. They have to make time for the lighting of the tree.
I mean, it's priorities at the end of the day. What's more important? Lighting the Christmas tree for all of America to watch, or some Steelers Ravens game that started off looking like the best game of the week on Thanksgiving. Everyone's so excited. Gets postponed to 6 days later. I think the spread's now -13. -13 or -10 for the Steelers. I know it was taken off the books for a while just because of all the uncertainty. Now it's RG3 versus Big Ben. And if you told me that in 2012, I'd be so pumped. And Mark Ingram is back too, even more 2012 big
yeah,
name.
Yeah, exactly. But the Saints electric and even the Washington. Well, they weren't the football team then, but you know.
But oh no, it's going to be a good one on Wednesday. But let's talk Monday night football, which was last night to begin, as we always do on these Tuesday morning podcasts, talking about the night before's game. Eagles versus the Seahawks, the battle of the birds. It was a really tough first quarter to watch, but as the game went on, it got a little bit more interesting. At the end of the day, it ended as most people expected.
Well, to get into the ending of that game, I don't know if you saw this because it was all over Twitter, everything, but the spread of the game, did you see this?
It was -6.5. Yeah.
-6.5. So I think Doug Peterson had some money on the spread because he just decided, let's go for 2 for no reason at all. Which you just saw Seahawks bettors all like that was one of the worst backdoor covers I've ever seen. But not just the
spread that got covered in the end. I mean, it was Richard Rodgers that caught that, I guess if you want to call it a Hail Mary to end the game. Not too many people have Richard Rodgers in fantasy. And if you do have him in fantasy, you probably weren't in a position where you needed him to get a touchdown to get into the playoffs because, like I said, Richard Rodgers probably don't have a great team. But that Carson Wentz, if you started Carson Wentz,
huge.
It's an extra 4 points for you on that Hail Mary, plus the yards.
Plus the yards.
Plus the 2 for the 2-point conversion,
which was to Miles Sanders.
Yeah. He handed it off.
No point.
That was to Miles Sanders.
Yeah.
But Miles Sanders is a guy, I own Miles Sanders. I'm currently sitting in last place in our fantasy league, but I still have a shot for the playoffs. So this not only ended a lot of people's betting hopes, and it was like you said, one of the worst backdoor covers ever. It's absolutely crushing how that went down, but it had some pretty big fantasy implications as well.
Yeah,
with the Hail Mary and the 2-point conversion.
Just going back, I mean, this game is just before we get into fantasy, because I had a weekend of terror when it came to fantasy. But a couple weeks ago, was it the Monday night or maybe it was last week actually, the Bears and Vikings, right? Was that last week?
I think it was
last week
the Bears were on bye. So
oh, right. Okay. Yeah, you're right. So we talked about how it's just so bad that it's hilarious to watch. And it's just like, it's so Bears. This Eagles game, it's similar, but it's just sad.
Yeah.
It's just like, what is the offense? It may be the worst in the whole league.
And it's especially bad because we've said all season, every time the Seahawks play, it's so entertaining because their defense is just equally as brutal as many of the worst offenses in the league. We saw them early on in the year winning these games 40-37, these high scoring games where Russell Wilson was having to carry the team. I mean, Russell Wilson wasn't bad yesterday, but
no, not by any
stretch. Wasn't this MVP, oh my goodness, must watch TV, look how amazing he's playing. It was a very nonchalant kind of game, and especially how it started. It was 0-0 for the longest time. We had the fourth and goal. The Seahawks went for it. It was terrible, and Carson Wentz just couldn't seem to get anything going. Also, the rumors going in that Jalen Hurts was going to get some time. I don't know.
False.
Yeah, where was that?
He handed the ball off a couple times. That was cool.
but he's gotten some action in, throughout the season. They bring him in for a snap or two. But I don't know. The Eagles are just such a disaster. And like you said, that Bears-Vikings game, you said it perfectly, because I remember at the time of the game was going on, we were going back and forth in our little fantasy group chat. And it was funny to watch because – you know what? The quarterback play wasn't the greatest, but it was a back and forth game, and it was just entertaining.
Mistakes everywhere. Yeah.
This was like, what happened to Carson Wentz?
It's the biggest drop off I've seen recently. The only other player that's currently in the league that I can think of like a significant drop off, I think Wentz and Fournette are like have to be the two biggest. What happened to you? It's just, you think about him. I mean, how many years ago? Is that 3 years ago now, his MVP season that he got hurt?
Yes, that'd be 3 years ago.
Yeah, now. He would have won the MVP that year. Everybody knows that. He got hurt against the Rams. And it's just, like, where is that guy who can just, it was the best. He would scramble around and he'd make these crazy throws. Now he's just scrambling around and getting sacked.
And it's so, so crazy because at the time he had that breakout year in his second season. If you asked anybody in the NFL, if you were to pick one quarterback to start your franchise, who would it be? Wentz was that young and upcoming face. It was, it has to be Carson Wentz. The Eagles were so good last season. He was so dynamic. He's mobile. He has a great arm. He's accurate. He only threw 7 interceptions that season. He already has 15 this season. His ball security is the worst in the league. That one interception he threw in the end zone last night, it was like there wasn't even an Eagle receiver around him. And you can only defend him for so long and say, oh, you know what? He doesn't have the receiving help. He doesn't have the firepower on the offense. I think Miles Sanders is a very, very good running back. He's about third or fourth in the NFL this season in yards per carry. It's the Eagles. Choice to only, I think they gave him 6 carries last night. They don't use him enough.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll chalk that up to coaching, but Miles Sanders is a very, very good player and a great weapon for Carson Wentz to utilize. I know Zach Ertz is injured, but Dallas Goedert might be even better than Zach Ertz. He's really emerging as a
top the best number two tight end in the league. 100%. There's nobody better.
And when Zach Ertz is on, he's a top 5 tight end. They used a first round pick on Jalen Reagor this year. Everyone laughs at them for that just because of how good Justin Jefferson has been. And Reagor, he had a couple injuries this season, but when he's been on the field, he hasn't really been able to prove himself. So is it a front office thing that they're not giving Wentz enough? Or is it just the Carson Wentz thing that it doesn't matter? Even the guys that he has, he's not getting the best of that out of them.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll find out until one of them's gonna be gone before you really realize whose fault it really was. But it's like, I mean, I don't know if you're the Eagles, what are you supposed to do? They showed a graphic on, I don't know if you saw it last night, and it's like, even if they cut him, they pay him $50 million next year and then like $20 million the year after that. It's like, so you're probably not gonna cut him. So I don't know, maybe it's time for Doug Peterson and that whole front up, maybe clean house, but they're in a tough position right now.
I really don't think they should be cutting Carson Wentz. Even if you look at his numbers last season, he was still very, very good. And last season, with the whole argument, was he really had nobody to work with on offense. And he still got them to the playoffs. I know it was in a weak NFC East, although last year's NFC East looks miles like better. The best division in the NFL compared to what it's like this year. But I don't think you can just move on from him, because he's proven before there's tape of him being a franchise quarterback. For me, where it gets complicated is the decision that they made to draft Jalen Hurts. Because now all of a sudden it's like, if you choose to move on from him, there's a guy that can take over, and they spent a very, very high draft pick on him. But I'm going to have to agree with you. I think they have to do something, make a change, whether it's Doug Peterson, whether it's, you know, Howie Roseman, whether they just clean the house out entirely, give Carson Wentz a fresh start, and just say, you know what, it's one bad season, we're going to forget about it. But like you said you can't think of a bigger drop-off. I know you brought up Fournette. I would put him above Fournette just because he's a quarterback. He would have been that MVP winner. And there were just such high hopes for this kid, and he's not delivering.
Yeah, he as bad as he's been, he deserves the benefit of the doubt of, here's a new coach for you to work with. And then if it doesn't work out, okay, well, then maybe you just look at cutting him and being like, well, or just make him the backup. We'll pay him, but like, what do we just have to move on? Sure. But yeah, I think he deserves one more coach and just one more run to kind of reset with everything.
Like, if Mitch Trubisky still started for the Bears this season, 100% Wentz deserves to still be the starter for the Eagles this season. We've seen far worse quarterbacks have a much, I guess, looser leash than what's being suggested for Wentz. And I think that's just because the expectations around him are so, so high, because we know what a talented player he can be. And he was a second overall pick in the draft. But not a good look for either top quarterback from that draft class this weekend. I know you were so high on the Rams last week, and I'm sure you still are. I still am.
Yeah.
One bad game, but
and Jared Goff, it's a division rivals. They're like, whatever. We don't have.
And I think people are massively underrating the 49ers because a couple of their big name players are down with an injury. But you got to remember that this team went to the Super Bowl last year. A team that goes to the Super Bowl doesn't just have a couple big name players. They have 53 really, really good players. So, you know what, it is what it is. But Carson Wentz, just to close off this discussion, a year from now, you're going to say Carson Wentz is still the starting quarterback of the Eagles?
Absolutely. And I think they're making a mistake. Well, okay, sorry. Maybe not a year today, because if it's week 12 of the next year and he's like still struggling, then maybe they've moved on. But at least, yeah, you got to give him the first couple weeks of next year, 100%.
I think it's especially like they have to stick with him because they're not in a division. Like if you're in the AFC North and you got Pittsburgh with you, you got Baltimore with you, Cleveland's 8-3 this season. They're even better than Baltimore with how they've been playing. And then Cincinnati has Joe Burrow. Like if you're in a division with that much talent and it's like, you know what, the best we're going to do with this guy is 7-9. We have to move on. I understand it a bit more, but in this division, 7-9 gets you a home playoff game.
Yeah.
So
be patient.
Just get it together a little bit more. There's been so many close games that the Eagles have been in this year. And if it weren't for Carson Wentz letting them down or just a really, really bad offensive struggles, they would have won. And like I said, it would be a lot easier if we just knew what the problem was, because it seems a lot more complex than that. But something's definitely wrong with the Eagles there, and their hopes at a playoff game are now in jeopardy with the Colt McCoy-led Giants.
Here we go.
The first best place in the NFC East.
What a game. What a game against the Bengals that was.
Brandon Allen versus Colt McCoy.
The end of that game was probably one of the best endings of any game this whole week.
I think the Bengals had like 90 something yards of total offense the entire game.
Yep.
And they return a punt past half. So now they only have to get about 10 or 15 yards to put them in field goal range. And they fumble on the first play and the Giants win. So on Wednesday, actually Thursday, the Cowboys were in first in the NFC East, if I'm remembering correctly.
Tied for first, I think, with Washington.
the stat I remember reading was that there were three changes in a matter of 5 days for for the division lead, because Washington took the division lead on Thursday when they thumped the Cowboys, and then the Giants retook that lead on Sunday. Now Daniel Jones is going to miss some time. I can't believe we're having this conversation, because for me, Daniel Jones winning a division is enough of, like, that's tough for me to comprehend. But now we're talking about Colt McCoy, and I still think there's a chance that the Giants can win this division.
Yeah, I mean, I think for them to win the division, I think Daniel Jones needs to be back in, I have the games up right here. He needs to be back in 3 weeks from now when they play the Browns. Because I think that we've discussed that last week. I think that's a winnable game. The 8-3 Browns, I think, will lose. But you look at their next games, they got the Seahawks and the Cardinals. Probably not going to win those games, even if Daniel Jones is playing. So I don't consider it that big of a deal, but that Browns game is huge, because if Daniel Jones isn't back, they're not winning that game. And then that really hurts their chances of winning the division.
Their record is what right now? They have 4 wins, the Giants?
Yeah.
So it's almost more that they just need Washington to lose, which is very possible, because you know, they looked great on Thursday against Dallas.
Everybody looks great against Dallas.
They've also looked very, very bad at some points in the season. I don't know what's going to happen with Alex Smith, that quarterback. I don't know how much more he has to offer. I love his story. Some people think he should win Comeback Player of the Year over Big Ben, and it's possible. He's definitely going to be a nominee there. But let's be honest, are we really going to count on the Washington football team to win? Because don't forget, the Giants have the tiebreaker.
Yep.
Because they've beaten them twice this season. So there's that in the equation. And then there's the Eagles, who we just talked about, who look like a disaster. So if I'm a betting man, I'm still fairly confident in this Giants team, just because I think they have the best defense. When Daniel Jones comes back, I think they can win a couple games down the stretch. And they still have one more game against the Cowboys, which I believe is in week 17, versus Cowboys.
They got to win two of their last games here. They have to win two. If they win two, they'll be in almost guaranteed.
Wow, what a division.
Solid six win season.
It's unbelievable what this division has become, because going into the season, I think most of us, I know you never really bought into the Cowboys, but I personally, and I'll admit this, I'm not afraid to say it, I thought Cowboys and Eagles were both 10 to 11 win teams and really push for the division, and the loser of the division could even get into a wild card, and it's just completely gone in another direction.
I thought it was going to be a repeat of last year, where it was going to come down to whatever, one of the final games between Cowboys and Eagles, 9-7, 10-6, like just a regular division, like nothing crazy, nothing special, but 6 wins gets you in.
I think the stat of the weekend on the NFC East is the Giants, with their win against the Bengals, fell from the 6th overall selection in the NFL draft to the 19th overall selection, which I'm not sure who's picking 18th, but they got to have at least 3 more wins than the Giants. So that's just crazy. It's almost like the team that's getting in is just hurting themselves, because they're going to end up with a not so great first round.
They all need high draft picks.
But you know what? Good on them for getting that playoff experience, whoever it ends up being. Let's stick in the NFC and talk about the Bucs. This was a NFC versus AFC matchup, and it was a highly anticipated one. And the score ended up being fairly close, and the Bucs got it back within one score late, but it was all Chiefs in this one. And in my opinion, it was an embarrassing performance for the Bucs. And now I've watched them, I want to say, at least 6 or 7 times this season in really big games. They've either been on primetime or they've played a big team at around 4 o'clock. And I've yet to see one reason why I think this team could win a Super Bowl. I'm really, really not fooled on with these guys.
There's no reason that game should have been as close as it was. The Chiefs let them stay in that game. They kept not being able to convert in the red zone. They were like 0 for 3 at one point, I think. And it's just, I honestly thought at halftime, I was like, these are the games that the Bucs, or in general, a team wins. When they should be down 20 at half and they're down like 7. And then they come out flying. And I really thought, it was like, the Bucs have a good chance here to win this game, and I would not be shocked. And they just never got it together. They Brady strung a few passes together at the end when they scored that touchdown. But other than that, it was just the Tyreek Hill show the whole game.
I just think that Bucs win over the Packers. The Packers were undefeated at the time. Rodgers looked, and he has been, he's rediscovered that MVP form that he had a couple seasons and that he's had throughout his career. So the undefeated Packers came to town, I think it was about week 4 or 5, and the Bucs just demolished them. It was total domination on offense, on defense. And it was just like, wow, this is for real. And that was America's game of the week. Everybody was watching. It was like the coming out party for Brady and Bruce Arians and Mike Evans and this new group. I really think if that game didn't happen, the general opinion on the Bucs would be fringe playoff team.
Like, yeah, average wild card.
They're maybe going to get into that final wild card. But because that game happened, everyone had such belief in them going forward, and then they continue to squeak out these tight wins. And now we've seen them lose 3 out of their last 4 games. And I'm really, really big. I think the two most important, you want to call it positions, I guess, roles for a football team are the quarterback and the head coach. And they need to be on the same page. It seems like every single week, Bruce Arians has a new quote of him just completely throwing Tom Brady under the bus. Like, it's ridiculous. I've never seen this before, especially from a coach that has 0 rings and he's playing with the most accomplished quarterback of all time. I just don't see how that remedy is going to result in any long-term or short-term success.
It's interesting. If you're Bruce Arians, whatever, it's like, it's the whole thing is like, I'm not going to give Tom special treatment. It's like, I'm like, treat everybody, whatever, like, don't treat your stars differently than you treat your, you know, regular players. But he, in a way, is giving Tom special treatment, just in a negative way. You don't see him ripping Fournette, Godwin, whoever.
Yeah.
After the game, it's almost like he's picking on him after every game or every loss, I should say, and doesn't say anything when they win. But I don't understand that. And this year I've really begun to not like Bruce Arians. I'm not like a Brady fan or anything. I don't care. He's great. I don't like him or hate him, but I don't know. I think there's a good shot he's not the coach next year.
Especially if, like, they have to have the expectation that it's, I'm not going to say Super Bowl or bust, but this team has to win at least 2 playoff games. Like, anything less than that, and it's
a failure. It's an absolute failure.
And it's not like they've just been losing. It's how they've been losing. This was a debacle. They got dominated by Tyreek Hill week before against the Rams. 2 horrible interceptions from Brady. That offense could never get anything going all game long. So it's like, I just can't believe this is happening.
And if you're Bruce Arians, like, adjust your offense to the quarterback that you have. Brady has never just been bombing the ball down the field other than like the 2007 season. That's not who he is. And that's not what makes him great. He's not by any stretch the best deep ball thrower in the league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite thing. The new quote this week was that supposedly Tom Brady designs the offense, calls all the offensive plays, and he runs the offense. I don't know what Bruce Arians does, but apparently all the blame is just on Brady. And I love what you said. He doesn't want to give him special treatment. And Bill Belichick never gave him special treatment. I think that was part of the frustration that Tom Brady had. Belichick always held Brady to a certain standard. And if he didn't meet that standard, he wouldn't be afraid to call him out. But Arians is almost like trying too hard to everyone to prove that, hey, I'm not going to let Tom have a free pass, that he's just resorting to just blasting him in the media every single week. I can't imagine this going over smoothly with Brady.
No, and I'm sure that's not what he expected. If he knew this was what it was going to be, there's no way he would have joined the Bucs. Absolutely not a shot.
And the whole story with Bruce Arians was that his first season with a new quarterback in the Bruce Arians system, every year that quarterback just has a ton of turnovers. We saw it with Carson Palmer. We saw it with Andrew Luck back when Bruce Arians was the offensive coordinator with the Colts. And then last season with Jameis Winston. I don't need to remind you how many interceptions Jameis Winston threw
and pick sixes last season. Yeah.
Exactly. And then Brady comes in, and through about 8 or 9 weeks, he had 4 picks, and his turnover worthy plays was amongst the bottom in the league. So it was like, wow, Brady's really, you know, he's the odd man out. He's doing the impossible. He's defying what's been happening to quarterbacks with Bruce Arians. Now we're finally starting to see that change. I think it's 7 interceptions. No. 5 or 6 interceptions in his last 3 weeks or four weeks, yeah. But it's just been not good. He's already tied his highest interception count in, I think, 10 years. So things need to change for the Bucs. 1-3 since Antonio Brown signed, which is my favorite statistic, I think, because I said I wasn't a fan of the signing. I don't think they needed him, and clearly they don't.
Yeah, no need. And first time he's lost 3 games in a row ever.
Yeah. Even that goes back to high school, 3 games in a row.
I didn't know that.
So pretty
good in high school too. Wow, would you look at that?
surprisingly good, yeah, in high school.
Surprisingly good in high school.
They're on bye this week, so maybe Brady and Arians have some time to play golf together, yeah. or do something.
I'm sure that's what they'll do. I'm sure they'll get together.
So they're not strangling each other on the sideline come week 17 when they're in danger of missing the wild card to the Trubisky-led Bears. But
The Kirk Cousins led Vikings. Yeah.
Yeah. Those Vikings are, they're making a comeback.
They really botched it with the game against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Like that is, it's come on. Then they got the Jags this week. So who knows? Vikings.
I feel like every week, like there's a couple teams, I just have no hope that they're going to win a game or at least another game going forward. I feel like every week the Jags just have a tough opponent. And it's like,
the Jags are 1-10, right?
They lost 10 in a row.
Yeah, yeah. 1-10. And I feel like every single game has been so close. I feel like they could have won every game.
It's like they have a tough opponent, but somehow they cover the spread and they keep it close. They just did it to the Browns. They did it to the Packers earlier.
They're tanking in the most elegant way possible. Yeah. With losing by 3, losing by 4, losing by 2.
A team that looked like they were tanking this week. What a segue that is. Was the Vegas Raiders.
I didn't even know where you were going with that. There you go.
I think maybe it was 3 weeks ago. We talked a lot about this team. We spent a good chunk of the show discussing how they are, you know, they play in Vegas, and they're like a joker, little bit of a cards reference there. They're so wild. It's like, and they did this last season too. 1 week they looked so good. They have it together. They're going to make the playoffs. The next week they go and they lose a disappointing game. Up until, or at least through the season, up until last week, we sort of started to see that change. And we thought, you know what? These guys are for real. They lost to the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football in a game that they probably should have won.
The most impressive loss. Yeah. The most impressive loss you'll ever see.
Like, I even heard some Raiders fans saying, I've never, like, not that I'm happy after a loss, but I'm really optimistic after what I saw, because we beat the Chiefs once and now we just lost to them on a last second touchdown.
Yeah.
Then they go out in a must win game because they're 6-4. You need to be 7-4 to keep pace with these AFC wildcard teams. And I picked them spread picks. We'll probably get into that later. We both had just awful weeks.
Horrendous weeks. Yeah.
But I picked them -3. Which was a number that looked a little bit too good to be true.
I said that's one of those games that there's too good to be true.
And I keep falling victim to that. Every week, the too good to be true, I lose it. Anyways, they wouldn't have covered if it was +36 because they got blown out to the Atlanta Falcons. One of the worst defenses in the league. Looked like the steel curtain against these guys. And a week after we both thought these guys are finally turning the corner, they look consistent, they go and they lay a gigantic egg. Are they back to
the Raiders that we know and love?
The Raiders that, exactly. You said it perfectly.
And just one more thing about the game. It's the perfect opportunity for the bounce back. Lose a tough game to the Chiefs. Now go blow the Falcons out.
Yeah.
Go beat them by 20. Get your confidence all the way back up. Even though I don't think it was probably still high after that Chiefs game. And then they just get the doors blown off of them. I like, as much as I say, I saw it coming with the too good to be true on the spread. I'd be like, I was thinking, okay, maybe the Falcons cover and whatever. Yeah. The Raiders squeak it out on a last second field goal, whatever. And we're like, come on, are they really that good? And it's just, it wasn't even close. I mean, at one point, I think it was 6-6.
Yeah, it was like a low scoring field goal back and forth early on. But like, you're right. Not even the most biased Atlanta Falcons fans in the world could have predicted this scoreline, because
they have been better since Dan Quinn left.
Yes. And their defense has been as well.
Defense has gotten quite a bit better, but still.
Which is funny because Dan Quinn's supposed to be a defensive coach. Yeah.
But the wild card team, if you're a wild card team, you'd win that game. You just don't lose that game. It doesn't happen.
I mean, a week ago, the Dolphins went into Denver and they played a really, really bad game. And they were a team that people were just starting to take note of. They're in a wild card spot. It's a game that you should win if you want to make the playoffs. And they played one of the worst games I've watched. And I said that last week. It was one of the worst games that they've played since when Brian Flores just took over and they were getting blown out every week. But they lost 20-13. And Fitzpatrick threw an interception in the red zone with about 2 minutes left. So they played that bad and they still kept it close. They still had a chance to tie the game very, very late. The Raiders, you know, everyone has bad games, but they just lost by, what was the final score? 43-6?
Something. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's
exactly played Derek Carr in fantasy. I played against Derek Carr in fantasy this week. He got 0.8 points. Like, at least put a little effort in.
Yeah, you know, throw a touchdown.
I think this is maybe just what John Gruden is. Some people think he's a great coach. Some people think he's a good coach. I don't think he's a bad coach, but where's the consistency, Gruden? Like,
my coach of the year comment really took a shot.
Did you say that last week?
The week that we talked about the Raiders. Oh, I don't know if that was last week. I was like, he's my coach of the year.
He just got outcoached by a substitute teacher there in Atlanta.
I don't even know who that coach is off the top of my head.
But boy, oh boy, like, it just shows. I think we're some sort of curse on this podcast, because every week we make some sort of claim that just goes completely sideways. It's usually not the next week, but it just sort of simmers. Weeks. It sits. We let that take marinate for a bit, and then it just comes back to haunt us. But yeah, like, now it's like, where do these Raiders go? I think they'll bounce back personally. Week 16, Dolphins versus Raiders on a Saturday night football.
Oh, baby, time. Saturday night.
I think that's going to decide who makes the playoffs.
It's a two-win game, basically.
Pretty much, yes. Yeah. Exactly. And the Browns... You know my feelings on the Browns. I think they're a good defense.
Our feelings
very,
on the Browns.
Very limited quarterback. I don't know if you caught wind of Baker Mayfield completely missing a wide open receiver in the end zone this week. And then he compared it to skim milk after.
Yeah.
Which I don't even want to get into. That was just weird. But they've already won 8 games. They have more easy games coming up. It's like, hate to admit it, they're probably going to get in.
They still have to play the Ravens and Steelers once more, but yeah, it's the most infuriating 8-3 team I've ever seen, because you know they're not 8-3. The real teams that they've played, they've lost. They credit to them, they did beat the Colts, but who knows with the Colts, because see what happened this weekend with the Titans. But I don't know.
I was just talking about our bad takes. We kind of did call that one.
Nailed the Colts. I don't know. We didn't say this upcoming week specifically. We said sometime, and it just happened, I think, a little bit sooner than we thought.
Like, we've stuck with our Colts hate kind of throughout. Not necessarily hate, but it's more so like, they're a really good team. I think they're a really well-coached team. But Phillip Rivers, like you said, is going to implode.
Sooner or later.
At any snap. He's just a ticking time bomb. He could throw an interception at any moment, and the Titans really looked like the better team. And I know they split the season series, but if it weren't for some really, really bad special teams 2 weeks ago when they played on Thursday Night Football,
Titans could have been 2-0.
The Titans had a very, very good shot in that game. So, you know what? Now they're tied. The Colts don't have the 2-0 to hang over the Titans' heads. And now the Titans are in the lead.
They're a game up, too.
Yeah. So that's, I guess, one example, one very rare example of one of our takes coming to fruition and benefiting us. So I'm going to give myself a pat on the back for that.
Once in a while, we get one right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So after Thursday's Thanksgiving debacle this week, your beloved Detroit Lions parted ways with legendary head coach Matt Patricia.
And GM, legendary duo.
What was he last year? 3-13, 4-12?
The tie. You got to remember the tie against the Cardinals week one.
Oh, of course. Kyler Murray's debut ended in a tie.
Yeah.
So you guys were
3-13-1. Yeah.
3-12-1 then?
Or yeah, 3-12-1. Yeah.
And then this season was
4-7.
Even though I'll bring this up just because I can rub it in a little bit. Maybe 4 weeks ago, you gave this little scheme on the show about how the Lions were going to get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's not working out for you guys.
No, it's over.
Yeah.
I'm happy about, because realistically, even if they were to make the playoffs, like this regime was going nowhere. They were not quality. They were not going to win a Super Bowl. They were not going to win even like two playoff games. God forbid, just win two. But I mean, it's really interesting. The whole era was just a disaster. They had Jim Caldwell before, if people remember, and they went to the playoffs 2 out of 4 seasons, and I agreed with the firing at the time. It kind of went flat. Like, it was 9-7, but it's like, you're not going anywhere from 9-7. Caldwell was not good enough to get you to the 11-5 division title where every team wants to be. Because really, no team really wants to be a wild card team over and over. You're not going to win the Super Bowl. It doesn't work like that. I agreed with the firing. I said, that's like the hungry mentality that we've wanted from the Fords, and it's just never happened. Finally got it. Disaster of a higher rate from the start. Nothing worked. He's the defensive coach. Previously, you mentioned Dan Quinn. You can't be a defensive coach and have a bad defense.
Yeah.
You can be a defensive head coach and have a bad offense. I get it. But if that happens, you need to have a stellar defense, top 10, like minimum. Mm-hmm. And needless to say, his best finish was his first season, 16th.
And that season, I think it was week 3, Monday Night Football against the Patriots. His return, it might have been in Detroit, but regardless.
It was in Detroit, yeah.
First game against his old protege team. It was a masterclass. It was a Matt Patricia masterclass. You guys shut them down. I think I don't remember the exact score, but just off the top of my mind.
I believe it was like
24-9 or something.
To 14. I remember, 14. I think they had 14 points. Yeah,
the Lions
won by like 10.
He comes in week 3. Maybe you were 1-1 going in.
We're 0-2 going in.
You're 0-2 going in.
It was a disaster. You don't remember. Let's backtrack. Just
see. I'm not the Lions faithful like you are.
Yeah. You'll remember Matt Patricia's first game because it was Sam Darnold's debut. It was Quandre Diggs, and he returned it for a touchdown. Is it a Quandre Diggs or Glover Quinn? I think it was one of them. Returned it for a touchdown. I was like, Patricia era, we're going to win probably 4 Super Bowls. It'll be the best defense of all time. And that's it. Proceeded to lose by more than, I think, 20.
Yeah, it was a blowout in the end.
Yeah. So it was, and then they lost to the 49ers. Garoppolo got hurt. That was that year. That was that same year. And then I was like, it's over. Masterclass, like you said, against the Patriots.
Saves their season. And it's just like, you know what? Rocky, I guess it was a rocky start, starting off 0-2. But there could be something here. And it's just completely just gone downhill.
There were flashes that first season. So they lost the next game. And then you'll remember the next game. It was, speaking of masterclasses, it was Kerryon Johnson's masterclass in Miami. Do you remember that?
The Dolphins playing the Lions.
Detroit in Miami.
Really, really bad.
In Miami. No, it was before you guys were like really bad.
It would have still been in the Tannehill.
Kerryon like went for like a nice 70-yard run. He had over 100 yards. Fantastic game.
Oh boy.
But it all comes crashing down and that's it. I'm happy they're gone. It brings up a good discussion though of coaching hires. I know Houston's obviously going to be looking for a GM and a coach.
Atlanta will be as well,
unless Houston goes for the Bill O'Brien experiment number 2 and does GM and head coach, which I just don't think is a good idea.
It's too much work for one person.
Yeah. It's coach the team that's given to you. Instead, you're creating the team that you're coaching. It's whatever. It gets really complicated, but who do you think is coaching the Lions and Texans? Let's talk about the Lions and Texans.
See, I guess Lions and Texans specifically is great discussion now, but I think this is far from over. If I'm going to make a bit of a bold take, I think about 5 or 6 more coaches are going to be shown the door by the time the season ends. You look at guys like in Denver there, Vic Fangio. I don't know how much time he has left. Mike McCarthy, they might keep him around.
Yeah. Personally, I think he'll stay. I think he might stay.
He will. If I was Jerry there, I would do some thinking in the shower and just completely.
And you even have Doug Peterson, like we talked about earlier. So yeah, openings will obviously continue to happen. Firings, Black Monday, everybody knows about it. But I don't know. It's really interesting. If as a Lions fan, I'm hopeful because despite how bad they've been, their team, they have pieces that are quality. You have Kenny Golladay. You obviously have Stafford. If you want to continue, I mean, you can obviously trade him, go for the rookie, but you have a QB that can theoretically win now. You have pieces on that defense like Trey Flowers. They've, these signees that haven't worked out, but I would like to believe it's also partly because of the scheme that it just didn't work. And these players were not put in a position to win. So I think that despite the lack of success, they have one of the more intriguing openings.
Yeah, and you mentioned that they have talent there. Matthew Stafford is what now, 33 years old?
32 or something. 33 years old? 33.
I'm not saying he's not a good quarterback anymore, but he's not going to get better. He's only going to start to decline. I think, and Kenny Golladay is... He's in that stage of his career now where you either have to throw money at him
or
you got to let him walk. So, yeah, they have pieces, but I think so much needs to be done on that D-line. I really like DeAndre Swift in your backfield.
Yeah.
So there's some pieces on offense. Your offensive line has Frank Ragnow has been
fantastic.
Really, really good. One of the most underrated players in the entire NFL since he was drafted in the first round a couple of years ago. But other than that, there's, some shaky spots on that O-line. So I look at this team where to get them to be a true, cause you mentioned, you don't just want to be a wild card team. You want to be the team that wins the division, gets a home playoff game and can win in the playoffs.
The Buccaneers have won the North more recently than the Lions have. Put that into perspective. Really? There you go. Yeah.
Wow.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So yeah, the division title is something we'd love.
So for me personally, yeah, there's some nice weapons, but I think you need to embrace a total rebuild and blow it all up, similar to what the Dolphins did last year, and be really, really bad for one season. And then, you know what? You draft a young quarterback, maybe a guy like Trey Lance this year, because you probably won't be in that Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields era, but maybe move up the draft board.
Yeah, it could happen. Well, it depends, right? Depends who if the GM comes in and says, I'm hiring this coach who loves Fields. Mm-hmm. Let's go out and trade a couple first rounders to get him. It could happen. And I'm not totally against that.
And because I think personally, it's best to embrace this total rebuild, I'd go after Lincoln Riley. I think it'd be a good idea. A nice offensive minded young head coach, similar to what the Cardinals are doing with Kingsbury. And the Cardinals did exactly that. They brought in Kingsbury. They just invested a really, really high pick on Josh Rosen. And they said, you know what? He's not the guy that's going to get us to be a Super Bowl contender. We want, and we really like this Kyler Murray kid. They went out and got him. I do something similar where, take a risk, blow it all up, see what you can get for Stafford, see what you can get for a little bit of your older veterans on defense and offense and get young.
Yeah. If you're a Lions fan, whatever, I think either way it can work out. And I'm not super keen on either idea. It's just, to me, it's whatever the GM and coach want to do. In terms of coaches and stuff, there's a lot of great names out there. I feel like this is one of the best batches of coaches that are going to be up to become head coaches or, head coaches in college, whatever, that we've had in a while. You have the only coach that I do not want them to hire is Harbaugh. Please do not do that. Because there's, it's a disaster in Michigan. I know we don't talk about college football at all because whatever. I don't think either of us are the biggest fans of it, but I know from paying attention to the Detroit market because of the Lions, obviously it's a complete disaster in Michigan. And there's, there's little rumors here and there that he might come back to the NFL, but please, it don't come to Detroit, go to a different team. You, I mean, there's other options out there. So that's the only name.
He might not have to move houses being in Michigan already. Yeah. So it's kind of enticing for him. Yeah. But I mean, if you're not welcoming him though, he's definitely not.
No. Detroit, I called the Fords. They said, okay, we're fine. But yeah, I mean, what are the options out there? You got Bieniemy, which it seems that everybody thinks, I mean, he should be in the Hall of Fame as a head coach already. I think that if you hire Bieniemy, I think it comes with, 3 or 4 Super Bowl rings, I heard.
I'll agree with you on this because Bieniemy has almost been disrespected, because I personally think by now he should be a head coach.
Absolutely.
So because he has been sitting and waiting for so long,
there's been an overcorrection.
And it's like, every single year, the team that fires their coach, right away you see the headline. It's a picture of Eric Bieniemy as a thumbnail, and the article is titled "Top 5 Potential Candidates for Whatever Said Team." Yeah. So because of that, because he's been waiting so long, it's like, oh, they have to hire him. And personally, I think he should be an NFL coach. I think he's done great things with Mahomes in KC, but I agree with you that he's become a little bit overvalued. I don't think he would be right for the Lions because of what I said. They need to embrace that rebuild. A team like the Texans, though, that you asked me, Deshaun Watson, he's not Patrick Mahomes, but he is a very, very talented quarterback. I'd love to see him go over there in Houston, take over and build a really, really exciting offense. But I do agree with what you said there, where everyone's almost like, oh, they have to get Bieniemy. And he's a great candidate, but there are also other really good candidates out there.
Yeah. Forgive me for being a little bit hesitant with an overweight coordinator from a Super Bowl team. There's the possibility that he's the offensive Matt Patricia. Like, it's like, if you look at I honestly think he'll be a good head coach, and I would not be upset if the Lions hired him, like, at all. I'd be happy, but the idea that he's going to step in and it's just going to be like, well, it's going to be the Chiefs offense again. It's like, look at what he's dealing with. Of course they're going to have success. Of course he's a part of it, but let's relax a bit and just take a step back. It's
exactly
fine.
That Patriots defense did not translate from New England to Detroit.
Not quite.
Doesn't mean that Kansas City offense is going to translate from Kansas City to Detroit if they were to hire him. But in some cases it has, you know. We always talk about Belichick, you know, protégés not working out. Brian Flores looks pretty good in Miami. I know I always toot his horn, coach of the year in my books, but he has. And it obviously, for me, what matters most in a head coach, and I think I've started to appreciate this more and more with what I've watched Flores do and the progress that he's made, is, you know what, schemes are great. You hear these, I mean, Adam Gase was hailed as an offensive guru a couple years ago, the quarterback whisperer, that he's just going to come in and have great success with quarterbacks. Schemes are great, but I think at the end of the day, you need a really, really good leader that players are going to get behind.
And that segues quickly, perfectly into a hire that, although he's a defensive coordinator, and do the Lions want to go with another defensive coach? His name, Robert, is it like Sala, something like that? The defensive coordinator for the 49ers?
Yeah.
Like he's that fiery, passionate. You see him on the sidelines, like, you know, hype with the players. It's like you want him to be a leader. I think players want to play for that guy. And if I feel like he might not, and I don't know if you know this, but he's from Michigan. He grew up a Lions fan.
Perfect fit right there.
Right. So, but I mean, the only thing that I'm hesitant about, and the reason I think they might not go for him, is they're just coming from a defensive head coach. And it's like, can you afford to, the whole league is hiring offensive coaches and it's working out everywhere, Cardinals, et cetera. Do you want to kind of double down on that? And then if that backfires, it's like, come on, you could have had
exactly the enemy. Like they need to get this right.
It needs to hit.
Yeah.
This coaching hire needs to hit. They can't afford to mess up their GM and coach hire again. But
100%. I guess we'll just see. And like we both agreed on, there are going to be other jobs become available, especially with how a lot of teams have gone and performed this year. Jacksonville Jaguars too. I'm surprised Doug Marrone hasn't been fired yet. He got them to the AFC Championship, I think, in his first or second season with the team.
Ever since then,
I don't think he's had a winning record.
Yeah.
It's been 4 or 5 years now. I think they'll show him the door. But yeah, we'll just wait and see on that. It's almost time for the spread picks, which is, of course, everyone's favorite segment on the show. But just quickly, I wanted to hear, because we didn't get to it, we meant to get to it earlier, a bit about your fantasy week this week, and especially give a shout out to someone that I really gained respect for this week, and that's Broncos wide receiver / quarterback Kendall Hinton.
Yeah, I'll just take everybody through my horror fantasy weekend that was. So my team ended up scoring, I think they scored on 97 points, whatever. I started Kendall Hinton thinking this is the move of the century. He's going to put up 25, whatever. It'll be great. He put up -2. But in the end, it wouldn't have mattered if who I played. No, there was no possible lineup combination that would have won. I had the unfortunate luck of going up against Madison, I went up against, or not, sorry, Thing. What's his name?
Antonio Gibson.
Gibson. Why did I say Madison? Yeah, Gibson. I don't know. I was thinking of the Vikings. Gibson, who put up 36 or something like that, 34, I think. Yeah. And then I had the pleasure of facing Tyreek Hill.
Yep.
So they basically, those two players essentially, I think my opponent put up 177 points, which I think is the most I have seen in a 12-team half-point PPR. I've never seen points like that put up.
Yeah, definitely the most points we've had in our league this season. For me, if you put up 120 points, that's like, oh, wow, my team had a really... Yeah,
you dominated.
Yeah. Like, for me, and we've talked about this before, 100 is the benchmark.
Yeah.
If you don't put 100 and you win, you got really lucky.
Yeah, it's lucky.
So once you get into that, you know, 100, 105, it's like, you know, you should have a chance.
Yeah.
120 is a good, good week. And then 140 is like, wow, this maybe happens once a year. But 170 points, like you said, this one individual just has a loaded team. Tyreek Hill.
Russell Wilson,
Dalvin Cook, who didn't even have a great week.
That's the thing. I thought I had a chance. Dalvin Cook put up 8 points. I'm like, listen, maybe, you know, Gibson had a great game, but I was projected to lose by like 3 points. So I'm like, this is a coin toss, basically.
Yeah.
And then no, it was not. And even Mike Evans too, little 18 points on top of that.
Every week, my favorite, I think I've referenced so many times favorite stats on this particular episode, but Mike Evans had a week this season, 2 catches, 2 yards,
2 touchdowns.
2 touchdowns. It's just like, so
it's like, it's like that Randy Moss game on Thanksgiving. Yeah, no. But well, it's also Bruce Arians is just,
yeah,
the system of just, let's just bomb it deep. But then for some reason they end up on the one and then they don't hand it off and they just throw it to Mike Evans.
So you started Kendall Hinton this week.
Yes. Yeah.
And he ended up going for -2 points?
-2, yeah, pretty solid. But like, I wasn't mad. I had Aguilar on my bench. I was like, that was a great sit. And they put up like 7 points, whatever. Jameson Crowder on the bench, 4 points. I couldn't be mad.
Yeah, it was just, I got to say, I really, really felt for that guy. He hadn't played a game of football in over 2 years, and they just threw him in. And it's like, what did you expect really to happen?
Yeah.
He only completed one pass for like 12 yards. But yeah, it was just a thrashing. And it just, for me, it shows everyone, because I can tell you 100% that there were thousands of Eagles fans that sat on their couch last night and said, I could do better than Carson Wentz. This guy's terrible.
Yeah,
you can't. It's just so hard to play the quarterback position. And for this guy to get thrown in without even a practice, it just shouldn't have happened. But it was unfortunate. But regardless, it's time for the spread picks. Last week, did the first ever 0-3 week on the spread picks.
Well, for me, you went 0-3.
I think I went 0-2 before, but I never went 0-3.
I think you went 0-3 2 weeks ago.
No, I was 1-2. I always end up squeeze. No,
though, I would have gone 0-3, but yeah.
Kyler Murray to Hopkins, Hail.
Yes, you're right. It saved you.
So,
and I'm on a streak now, 2 weeks in a row, I've picked teams and their quarterbacks have gotten injured in the game. The Giants should have covered very
this week. Was Daniel Jones, who was it the week before?
Burrow.
Oh yeah, that's right. Against Washington.
Washington.
So you're cursing teams.
Yeah. Who gets week, first pick so. This week? I think it's
me.
Yeah, it's you. Yeah. So go for it.
I'll start this one. I'm gonna come out and exercise my demons right away. Last week, the Raiders let me down in just the worst fashion ever. And I even debated. I said, I'm thinking about picking the Titans +3.5, but I'm going to go with the Raiders. They need to bounce back. I said last week was a must win. This is even more of a must win. They play the Jets on the road and they're favored by 7.5. I'm going to take that. So the Raiders.
Raiders. Yeah. Go for the little bounce back game there. It's tough. I'm going to go. It seems too easy once again, but I'm going to go Packers -8 against the Eagles. I know the Packers, they didn't cover against the Jaguars and they kind of play down to their opponents. I'm almost talking myself out of it as I just made this pick. But Wentz is so bad. I think the Packers defense needs a game where they just dominate, even though they did. I mean, listen, it was against the Bears, so take that with a grain of salt. But I'll take the Packers -8.
I like that pick. That was definitely one of the ones that that I was even looking at too. There's a couple good ones that I like this week. I'm gonna take the Colts to bounce back.
Okay.
They're favored by 3. No Will Fuller for the Texans. I know the Texans have a little bit more time, but they're coming off this huge, huge Thanksgiving win. And the Colts, never mind they're chasing the division, there's going to be some other teams in the AFC that are going to be knocking on the door for the playoffs. The Ravens already beat the Colts this year, so if it comes down to a tiebreaker with the same record, the Colts would unfortunately lose that, so they're going to need to win every game that they can. Give me the Colts -3 on the road.
A pick I didn't even really register when I was looking for the first pick, but absolutely love the Titans -5.5 against the Browns.
Really?
Yes.
I was thinking of taking the Browns to cover that, actually.
Go for it. Be on the other side. But I think it's just more of my hatred for the Browns and how they're 8-3 and they don't deserve to be 8-3. And I think this is the game. Just blow them out. Beat them by 20. I know it is. I mean, it's the
Titans
perfect.
Have shown a little bit of
it's also the perfect spot for a letdown game after your huge win. But you know what? I'll avoid all the warning signs. Go ahead. Titans -5.5.
Okay. Just from a Lions fan's perspective, what are your thoughts on the Bears being favored by 3.5 with a new coach for your Lions over there?
I agree. I think it's a fair. Actually, I don't know. I think I don't know if I'll pick. I don't know if you're about to pick this, but I do think the Bears will cover that.
Really?
Yeah. Because especially if Mitch Trubisky, little known fact, is very good against the Lions.
Is he undefeated in his career?
Yeah, I don't think he's ever lost. He's a good. He looks like a perfectly balanced quarterback. Nice runs. He throws the ball a little bit down the field. He's a starting quarterback against the Lions, not a backup.
So a little bit of history on that game. Week one, DeAndre Swift dropped the ball in the end zone to win you a game. That was against the Bears, correct?
Yep.
And Trubisky fueled a 20-point fourth quarter comeback.
Yep.
I kind of feel like taking the Lions +3.5 after hearing that, just because it's like that cannot happen twice.
With the new coach, you think it's
new coach? You know what? I'm really talking myself into this. New coach, new energy. Stafford's going to look like 2012 Matthew Stafford. Marvin Jones is going to look like Megatron did when he was with the Lions. I mean, I can't unsee what I saw on Sunday Night Football this week with the Bears. It was bad. Like,
I don't think you realize how bad the Lions offense has been.
No, but I'll give a little history on this. The Dolphins had Joe Philbin as a coach. I don't know if you even remember who that was.
No.
This was probably about 2014. And they fired him mid-season. I think, yes, no. It might have been an even earlier coach than Joe Philbin, but regardless, they had mid-season. Dan Campbell come in mid-season. Okay. He was a tight ends coach. I think the team was like 2-4, 2-5. And the Dolphins came out and won the first week. I think it was 38-10. And the next week they won 42-0. Like, these were some of the two best games I've ever seen the team play. They just came out firing, like touchdown on the first play of the game, back-to-back weeks. I don't know much about this new Lions head coach, but I just feel like this Patricia thing is just going to lift that entire organization. No disrespect to Matt Patricia, even though it's a disrespectful statement, but I'm going to take the Lions to cover +3.5. I might even take them if they were favored, because I really like them to win this game.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I don't feel super strongly about either side. I'll take Pittsburgh minus 10 against Washington. I know they're notorious for playing down to their opponents. They haven't really done it this year. It's the Monday night game. If you can't find it.
Yeah. This game got moved to Monday too, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is the early Monday game.
Yes.
So why is it that the Steelers are playing Wednesday and the Ravens get to play Tuesday, but the Steelers, like Steelers fans, are already complaining about all this stuff. I think that's going to bother.
They're making the perfect season difficult on them.
Yeah.
They don't want to see it happen.
So you're going to take Steelers minus 10?
Yeah. I think they continue their trend of blowing out bad teams and maybe breaking the old Steelers past of winning every bad or beating every bad team by two. So, yeah.
So I'll ask you a question because you mentioned the perfect season. Steelers are what, 10-0? They currently sit at 10-0. They're one of the most disrespected 10-0 teams I've ever seen.
Yep.
Everyone says, oh, cakewalk of a schedule. They're not what their record indicates. I think they're a very, very good football team. Nobody was hating them when they were 4-0. Everyone was saying, oh, Steelers could be on the come up. Now that they're so successful, everybody likes to hate. It's like that in the NFL every single year. But honestly, if they somehow go 16-0, would you consider them as one of the greatest teams of all time?
They'd have to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. But that Patriots team that went 16-0, I think it was 2007, didn't win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They're still considered as one of the greatest teams. But I just feel like if this
happens, I don't think it would be considered because they didn't play the Chiefs.
I think that's fair.
Like you didn't beat everybody, the Super Bowl favorite. Which is weird to say because the undefeated team still would not be the Super Bowl favorite. I think if they played in the AFC Championship and the Steelers still haven't lost, I don't think the Steelers would be favored.
Yeah, the Chiefs would be given at least a point or two.
Yeah,
even though it would be in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, exactly. Which is insane to think.
It's like this year they played against the entire NFC East. That's four wins right there. They played the AFC South. And then it's just the Steelers were second place last year, so you don't have to play any of the first place teams in the AFC. And then you have everyone in your division twice, and the Bengals aren't ready yet. The Browns, I mean, up until a few weeks ago, Big Ben had the most wins at the Browns Stadium until Baker finally passed them. So I'm not going to discredit them and say cakewalk schedule, but I'm with you. If they're 16-0 and they're playing in the AFC Championship, I'd still put my money on Mahomes. Yep. And the Chiefs. That's three picks from each of us, correct?
Yep.
I'm looking to improve on my record. I've now dropped to below 500. First time all season.
What am I? I think maybe, am I 500 now? No, I think maybe I think I'm 13-12. So
you're just cutting it close. It's oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly,
because we started off so
I was 12-6. I'm now 13.
Next week, 13 and 12. We're both getting the little frost emojis on the Instagram graphic.
Because we're ice cold.
So cold as of late. But hopefully when we sit down next week and do another one of these
6-0 week across the board.
Yeah, hoping. Honestly, even though I'm trying to catch you, I wish us both a 3-0 week because it's just been so tough. But that's going to do it all for today's episode. If you made it to the end, we thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at From the Nosebleeds Pod, and we will see you next week.
Have a good week, guys.